even further than that. You know, I don't know a lot about that, but by the way, if you ever want to read a fascinating book on the history of the trade union movement during that time, Roy Godson, I don't know if you know Roy, mm-hmm. Roy's did a book in 1975, which I read last year or the year before. That's a fascinating piece on all of this stuff. So the French unions had, you had the communist French unions, you had the mm-hmm. democratic French unions, then you had mergers, and you had, you know, I can't give you a chapter and verse. David Dorn right. can give you a lot of that
stuff.
I remember representing AFT at the French Teachers Convention back in the 80s, sometime, and you could see the groupings, you know. Fascinating.
That's interesting.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. The Japanese were very close to us. There was a president there called Tanaka, T-A-N-A-K-A, who was very close to Al, and he had a lot of, there was a very substantial communist trade union movement there.
Really?
And he was able to wrest control of the union mm-hmm. from the communist group. And he was interesting because he was also very interested in professional development. And he and Al were very, very close. The French, of course, we've learned a lot from the French in terms of their dedication to early childhood education. You know, in France, I think the kids start going to school at age 3.
Yeah.
And the results are very, you know, very eye-opening.
Mm-hmm.
There's an interesting story about Japan that is an example of how our international connections are meaningful to us in our work here in combating anti-education, anti-public union stuff. There was somebody did a study, I think it was one of the right-wing groups, saying, do you know in Japan, the teachers spend many, many more hours in school than the American teachers. American teachers, they should be working at least 8 or 10 hours. The teachers in Japan do. So Al looks at that, and Al says, let's find out what's going on over there. He calls Tanaka. A couple of our people go over there. Guess what? They're doing what we've been calling for a long time. They teach fewer hours than our people,
mm-hmm.
but they have a lot of collegiality. They have a lot of time built into their day when the teachers meet talking about teaching.
And they're actually being paid for this.
And they're actually being paid for this. So what began as an attack on us, because we had relationships there, we were able to turn around
mm-hmm.
and say, guess what? Number one, they don't teach as long as we do. And they're there because they're doing the things that we've been called on, that we've been calling for.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers working together during the day, you know. So it was really very interesting.
That is interesting. That's a nice turnaround of events.
Yeah.
Keeping the context of international.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same thing also, I guess same thing is how, when Al went over to England and discovered the teacher centers, brought them back.
Yeah. Same thing now when G.D. Kemble and the Shanker Institute are talking about workplace development. And having and bringing and going over, a number of us went over there a year and a half ago to meet with the trade unionists who have been able to get government funds to fund programs of continuing education for workers, particularly in industries where the industries are, you know, downsizing mm-hmm. and going out of business.
Hmm.
And coming over here and talking to our people about how that is done and how to get government support for it. It's very interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that you know, that still is all of a piece and all going on.
Excellent. Anything else you want to add on to the international issues before we move on? And one of the last things, I guess, was one of the last things Al actually spoke at, I think, was the formation of Civitas? C-I-V-I-T-A-S.
Civitas.
Civitas, thank you. And what is Civitas?
Civitas is a an organization, a loosely knit organization of educators for democracy throughout the world. There's a lot of foundation grants to promote democracy and teach civics education. And Civitas was an attempt to bring all these groups together. There really never was an international structure to bring all these various groups around the world who have this commonality of interest together.
Mm-hmm.
Civitas was an attempt to do that.
Oh, okay.
When Penn Kemble was the acting director of USAID,
mm-hmm.
He funded some, he was able to put in some seed money to create this Civitas thing. And there are a number of, Chuck Quigley, I don't know if you know Chuck, who have grants from the government on this stuff. And Penn saw this as the potential for an international movement.
Right.
With Penn's death, I don't know where it is now.
Sure.
David May. No, mm-hmm. Dorn.
No one really knows where the Social Democrats are either, since Penn's passed.
No, you know, the Social Democrats are, as an organization, are social. Look, Social Democrats was never a huge organization.
No. Mm.
But it was incredibly effective in that you had, you know, 6, 7, 8 people who really were movers and shakers.
Yeah, and I mean, the internationals you were talking about. I mean, Social Democrats were helping, giving advice, talking. Yeah. But on that, we can talk a bit about more AFT, and you know, we talk about the '80s international, but '80s and AFT, that's the shift. A lot of people saying from a it was a huge shift from not only just being a trade union for teachers, but here we are at Shanker introducing new ideas of collective bargaining. Professional, being treated as a professional. The revolution in the 1983 and 85 strikes. So, you know, this whole idea of the education reform movement in the 80s and AFT being right in the middle of it. There's all this rumor, this story, that when Nation at Risk came out, everybody was sitting around waiting for that. What's Al going to say?
I think there's a good bit of truth to that. Got to go back to get into this. Let me go back to Ocean Hill-Brownsville.
Okay.
There's a connection. After Ocean Hill-Brownsville, I think Al was disturbed that his persona, his public persona, was as this tough labor leader who was accused of racial insensitivity. So, now, by the way, here's a guy who was working in the South for the civil rights movement when it was pretty tough to do that. But his public persona was the opposite. And I don't think he was unhappy at all that he was viewed as a tough labor leader. But he wanted a way of getting involved in creating an aura, a vision, a mood, as someone who was really intimately interested in education and professional development. And at the time, Arno Beichmann, you know Arno Beichmann? Arno Beichmann was the guy who Al said to him, Al, you should write a column in the New York Times. Which, of course, became Al's famous column in the New York Times, where he dealt with a whole series of issues, but most of all, he dealt with education, dealt with international affairs and democracy and all that. But it gave him a platform, and it did give him an opportunity to become a statesman in education, a voice that people respected. I mean, a lot of people in the highest positions in Washington read his column every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So that created an ability. It gave Al a credibility as an educator. And that's why you say people were interested in knowing how Al would react. And the knee-jerk reaction, because it was so critical of education, the knee-jerk reaction would have been to dismiss it, to attack it.
Mm-hmm.
But Al saw a great opportunity. And I got to tell you, I don't think that Al was, I think in his gut, he just realized that a lot of it was true. And Al was, it was incredible that he would really say what he felt. And I think he knew that he might be putting himself at risk by taking the position that he took, which was supportive of so many of the conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
But he really believed it. And I think that by that time he had developed such credibility as a statesman that people were ready to listen.
Right.
And I don't recall a lot of, it may have been, but I just don't recall a lot of pushback against this position, although I would think it probably at the very beginning there might have been.
Oh, sure. I think the biggest battle over education reform on council was when Dow Lawrence brought his peer review.
Yeah, that's true.
And a lot of councils were, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Al Fondi, of course, yeah. But,
Walter Tice. Al Fondi. That's true. I take it back. You're right. I was thinking more in terms of the membership, delegates,
the membership,
and so forth.
I think
the council, though, you're right. There was a lot of pushback.
Yeah, membership went right along with it. They saw, that was needed, and Al made a great point. We can fight it, be on the outside, or we can go with it and be on the inside. But here's the whole shift for AFT from fighting not only politics in the 70s and surviving in the 70s, but moving into more professional development that we've always been talked about, but on a national level now. It pushed AFT where NEA was going more of the radical side.
Yeah, and it gave Al the opportunity to move even further, because I see a connection between that position that he took and then his call for a national teacher's credentialing,
mm-hmm.
licensing, you know?
Right.
So he really was able to change his persona from tough labor leader to education statesman. On substance. In other words, it wasn't smoke and mirrors, it was real. He really did have important ideas. You know? So, So, yeah, I think you're right when you say people were waiting to see.
Because this is the big chance, the big opportunity.
Yeah. Now, by the way, contrast that with how the trade union movement as a whole in the last 10 years has refused to look for ways to be influential with respect to globalization. Just knee-jerk reactions. I mean, the state of the labor movement in this country, yeah, it's true that there's a lot of attacks by the far right, but the labor movement itself has lost its way because it has forgotten what the nature of a federation is.
Mm-hmm. Whereas it seems the international, with this latest international merger, and IE.
Well,
it looks like they're looking forward to, you know, moving forward.
What's the nature of a national federation? The purpose of a national federation is to create a mood in the country, to create a voice, a national voice, for a particular perspective for working people. But for the last 10 years, you have a movement which thinks of itself as a local. The most important thing we have to do is organizing. The affiliates are the organizers. The most important thing that the Federation has to do is to create a mindset in the minds of workers and the public in general as to the value of a free trade union movement in a democratic society. Not to be the organizers. Mm. You want to be an organizer? Go work for a local union or a state affiliate. But if you're going to be leader of the Federation, your job is to create. I mean, there was a time when you would turn on Meet the Press and there would be George Meany.
Yeah.
There was a time when Lech Walesa wasn't sure whether when he flew here the first person he wanted to see was the President of the United States or Lane Kirkland. There was a time when the Commission on Iraq would have had a George Meany or Lane Kirkland or Tom Donahue on it.
Now we're begging to be in.
Because they had a broad view of the nature of what the movement is. Were they right all the time? Were they successful all the time? No. But what happened is, I think the movement has lost sight of what the movement is. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going far afield.
Hey, no. Yeah. Actually, I think we've almost covered everything.
Great.
And that's a great way to, I mean, do you see, we could do this wrap-up stuff. I mean, you already started what's happened to the labor movement, but is NYSET and UFT basically sticking to, I mean, what they started out to be? And, of course, they haven't, but what changes, and are they going to be a major leader in the movement?
Well, you know, we didn't talk at all about the AFT's attempt to merge with NEA, really.
Oh, okay.
And I think that one of the things that AFT has to, both NYSET, I have to come at this in two ways. Both NYSET and AFT are going to grapple with their success, with their bigness. NYSET, 500,000. AFT, 1.3 million. And I say that as someone who is one of the luckiest people in the world, having come up during this magnificent growth in perspective, as well as, you know, membership and resources and everything else. So here you have success that makes these entities so big that it takes full time just to run what is there. And so in a sense, I feel empathy for leadership from here on in to be able to surmount the burden of running efficiently a very large organization that services people and have the additional burden of creating a vision and a mission which needs to be part of the overall movement of America, which has to identify with what is good for America. One of the things, I talked a little bit before about the British with lifelong learning and workplace development. How did they get all that money from the federal government? How did they get all of it? They did not talk about the union. They didn't talk about the fact that the union was going to lose members and therefore lose. They didn't view the problem as a union problem. They viewed it as a problem for the British government, for the country. They said, we need to develop our citizens to be able to participate and support all those things that the country needs. They talked about the country. And so it's very hard now that we're big, now that we've got so many constituencies, it's going to be very hard for the new leaders to be able to manage all that and still have the retreats that give them an opportunity to look at the bigger picture, because in final analysis, their job is not to manage.
Mm-hmm.
Their job is to create, is to create the connection between what is good for the union and what is good for the country. It's hard.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah.
Particularly when human nature is such that what you want to concentrate on are the things that are easier to do.
Right.
And it's really easier to manage an organization with all those difficulties than it is to say, how do I want to move the ship?
Mm-hmm.
Which way should we want to go? So the last thing I would want to say is that I really feel I'm the most fortunate person in the world. I just couldn't be happier with what the union has done for me. I really mean that.
Yeah.
You know?
As I said, Long Island, that was a game, to international traveler, heads of state. Yeah. Do you want to talk about the merger issues, or no? It's up to you.
No. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
There you are.
See, there's meeting Bill Clinton and Hillary.
The first Christmas that he was president, we got invited to the Christmas dance in the East Wing. Barb and I are dancing to the Marine Band in the East Wing, and I said to Barbara, my father owns a candy store, what am I doing here? And she said, dance.
Beautiful. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you.